With that, we are going to dive in. And like I said, the way I want to start the show is talking a little bit about the conversation surrounding Epstein online, because I find it to be deeply problematic. And I know that I've been the subject of a lot of controversy because of this conversation for comments that I've made. I said that Epstein was not a true pedophile in the sense that, strictly speaking, according to definitions, dictionary definitions, the girls that he preyed upon and groomed were aged 14 to 17. At least that's underage. He also trafficked other girls that were above the age of 18, up to 25, early mid-20s. And people took issue with that. I'm not defending that. I'm not saying that's okay or legal. Of course, it's still a crime, and of course, it's still depraved and deeply immoral. He's trafficking vulnerable women for prostitution, effectively. And I think there's nothing good about that. Strictly speaking, though, we have to define our terms and we have to create the correct categories. And I've said the reason for this is because you need to understand what Jeffrey Epstein was doing. What was his function? What was his role? And that's the question that we're going to answer tonight. Now, the reason we have to talk about his specific activities and draw those distinctions and define the age groups and the type of activity that was occurring, it's because that actually tells us what he was. And so I've seen for the past couple of weeks, people are fixating on the fact that he was a sex trafficker. They call him a pedophile. And they focus on some of the most extraordinary and wild and actually uncorroborated, unsubstantiated claims in the files. So, for example, they look at the claims about the youngest victims under the age of 14. And they talk about ritual abuse with occult or religious significance. They talk about cannibalism, torture and murder, these sorts of things. Now, the question concerning what Jeffrey Epstein is involves the types of activities he engaged in. And the fixation on those kinds of claims, which for the most part have not been proven, are not substantiated with evidence, in many cases involve just basic errors, basic forgeries using artificial intelligence, transcription errors, data corruption, these sorts of things, and I'll give you some examples in a moment. The fixation on those sorts of claims tend to support a theory of Epstein which says that he is some kind of occult-like, satanic religious figure, that the island and the activities he was involved in suggests that he is involved in some kind of occult cabal that secretly controls the world and has maybe no relation actually to any organized religion, has no relation to Judaism, might not even have a deep relationship to the Israeli state or the Russian state or the CIA, but is in fact higher than those states. And so you then tend to get some conspiracies which say that this is an Illuminati thing. It's a Khazarian mafia thing. People talk about occult sects. For example, those led by Sabbatai Zevi and Jacob Frank in the Middle Ages and the early days of the Enlightenment. And so when we talk about what Jeffrey Epstein was doing, of course, this is in the service of understanding what Jeffrey Epstein was. What he did suggests his purpose, and therefore what he was really involved in, who he was associated with, and the kind of operation he was running and why he existed. And as I said on Monday, so much of that is problematic. We went through on Monday some of the most viral claims that have emerged from the Epstein files, and I went through some of them on the show. I even talked about them on Telegram too. For example, there was an email that said that Epstein made a bank transfer to an entity called Baal. And this is something that the conspiracy theorists took and ran with. And they said that this was evidence, this was established fact, and supported the claim that Epstein was some kind of occult Satanist. They went through these 3 million documents. They did a command find or an AI search. They found the name of an ancient deity mentioned in the Bible. And they said, this email, which is already vague and ambiguous, this mention of Baal, this verifies the claim that he was some sort of satanic Kabbalist. Well, we found out that this was most likely a transcription error. And whether the original document was scanned or maybe the entry was mistyped, upon further inspection, it was very clear that it didn't say Baal at all. It actually said bank name. It was part of a receipt for a wire transfer, and under that was all the other information you would expect on a wire transfer. Routing number, bank account number, all of the different things that you would see on that sort of receipt. And it would actually make a lot more sense that the entry said bank name rather than Baal. That's one of those that got millions and millions of views, hundreds of thousands of likes, retweets, engagements. And surely you have many people in the country that now perceive that as an established fact. That is in their mind, that's in the consciousness, that that is something that actually happened. He's a satanic pedophile. There are other instances in the files. For example, a well-known Indian sent an email to Epstein talking about doing hot yoga in New York City. And the email was very vague, very short. He said, 30 between 6 and 7 at 9 a.m. This was one of the emails. That was the line. I saw people posting this uncritically, again, with tons of engagement, and they said, well, surely that means there are 30 6 to 7-year-old children who are showing up for hot yoga at 9 a.m. in New York City. Like, that even makes sense. But of course, people saw the numbers. That is something that confirmed their pre-existing bias, their pre-existing theory about Epstein. And so people didn't even think about it. Think about how ridiculous that would be, that there's a class of 37-year-olds doing hot yoga in the morning. How would that even be possible? How does that even make any sense? I don't think there's a lot of 7-year-olds doing hot yoga in the morning on a weekday. Well, it turns out if you actually need evidence beyond just common sense, that if you go on Google Maps, the name of that hot yoga studio, which has since been closed down, well, it happens to be located on 30th Street between 6th and 7th Street in Lower Manhattan. So it's not 30 6 to 7-year-old girls. That was actually just the location. And there were many, many examples of this in the files. There was another one. And these have actually come out since my show on Monday. Yeah, I went over about a half dozen of these on my show on Monday. These are new ones that I've seen crop up over the course of the last week. There was another one. Email from Epstein. He said, we have a yummy 19-year-old who is coming to visit. 19-year-old Brazilian girl. Well, unfortunately, many of the emails, when they were uploaded, the data was corrupted. And you'll find throughout the emails that many of the characters, many of the individual letters or numbers, are replaced by an equal sign or some other form of punctuation, which in context doesn't make sense. So it turns out that in the emails, that one in 19 actually is shown as equals 9. So a lot of people are posting an email that says yummy equals 9 years old. And so they think that Epstein was trafficking a yummy 9-year-old from Brazil. Well, if you actually inspect the files, you'll find the original document says 19. The one was corrupted, replaced with another character. People just overlooked that. They chose to ignore that there was something in there which maybe didn't really make a lot of sense. But there's an additional character there, but for them it was invisible. And so you see this kind of stuff throughout the Epstein files. And as I said on Monday, why am I doing this? This is the question I hear. This is what I see all over X, because I and other people like Michael Tracy and Richard Hanania and others have been trying to separate out the fact from fiction. We're looking at the 3 million files and what is being reported about them on social media and the viral claims, the most extraordinary claims, And we are actually trying to discern whether the information is true. Is there actually a video of a girl tied to the grass being tortured with a magnifying glass? Is there actually a yummy 9-year-old? Are there actually 36 to 7-year-olds doing hot yoga? We are trying to discern whether the claims are real, whether the information is substantiated, whether there's evidence. And I see people online say, well, why? Why are you defending Epstein? Why are you scrutinizing what is being posted on Twitter? Is it because for one reason or another, you're supporting him, defending him, want to exonerate him or absolve him of guilt? And the answer is no. It's not about defending Epstein. It's not about absolving him of guilt. It's about achieving an understanding of who this person really was, what he was really doing, what he was really all about. To do that, we actually have to have some basis in reality. We actually do need real evidence. We actually do need to see things that are real and not fake, not AI forgeries or, like I said, typos, scanning errors, data corruption. We actually need the real information. And as I said on Monday, the reason this is so important is because when we're looking at the facts, we're also engaging in narrative creation. So if you are looking at all of the fake stuff over the past week, you've seen that all of this has been assembled together into a narrative, a conspiracy theory. All of that contributes to a picture of who these people think Epstein was. And so the kinds of things that I see on TikTok and on Instagram and on Twitter, it is a summary of the facts. And it says something like Epstein is a pedophile, Satanist, controlling our government. This is the refrain that I see on all the viral posts. Our government is controlled by satanic pedophiles. Our government is controlled by occult pedophiles. Our government's controlled by satanic child molesters. And you can see how this information, you can see how the most extraordinary claims, like for example, FBI tips that George W. Bush cut a girl open and ate her intestines and the fecal matter contained in her intestines. You can see how those types of things, which are not corroborated, which don't even make sense, other things which have been debunked are being pooled together. And without being fact-checked, without being scrutinized, they're assembled together and creating a narrative, which then goes out into the zeitgeist. And now you have basically this consensus opinion forming in society that what Epstein is, when we think Epstein, what he is a satanic pedophile running the government. Our government's run by satanic pedophiles. And this is what I call the Epstein myth. This is the hoax. And it is a hoax. As we laid out on my show on Monday, which is called The Epstein Hoax, so much of the data points in that myth are just not true. They're either not substantiated, not corroborated, or to the extent that there are bits and pieces that have been put together upon closer investigation, they turn out not to be real at all. Why is this problematic? Because when we look at the evidence and we actually scrutinize what is occurring here, we find there's a very different picture of Epstein. We find the real Jeffrey Epstein. And the real Jeffrey Epstein is quite different than the myth of Jeffrey Epstein. And the real Jeffrey Epstein, I don't think, is a satanic pedophile that runs the government. The real Jeffrey Epstein is a Jewish fixer. That's the real Epstein. That is his essence. That is what defines him. That is the milieu that created him, that is the higher society that empowered him with money and connected him to powerful people. And ultimately, those are the interests that he served. And once you create this dichotomy, once you create this dialectic between the Epstein myth and the Epstein reality, you start to see that maybe the former is actually a kind of a limited hangout. Which is to say that there are selected facts or stories or data points that are introduced to the public, the most salacious, the most sensational, the most outrageous, and they are literally curated for public consumption as a form of a giant diversion, as a form of a giant red herring. If the public is so fixated on things which are debunked, not real, but also things that are maybe extremely sensational, they get caught up in a completely different narrative, a completely different vision and version of who Epstein was. And then they never actually get down into the real facts, the real information, and ultimately, which elucidates the real Epstein. And so in a way, it's sort of like a layered psyop. You have this figure who is in the center, regardless of what you think about what he did and what he is, it is inarguable that he is at the center of higher society. He is a connector and a nexus for business, intelligence, government, for different countries. He's at the center of elite society. This person is exposed completely to the world, and all the people and how they operate and their dealings are exposed with him. Their emails, their investments, the places they went, the people that they knew, it has all come to light because he went down, the DOJ collected all of his information, and now it is in full public view and there is attention on it, lots of attention. Now, how might you obfuscate the truth if it's in plain sight? How would you obfuscate if you are these powerful people and you want to protect this racket and you want to conceal something which has been so exposed and for which there's so much attention on it? How would you conceal it? Well, you would probably obfuscate it. If you can't exactly hide it, if you can't get people to stop talking about it, maybe you give them something else to talk about. Maybe you give them something more interesting to talk about, something more sensational, more extreme. You give them something that is actually not real. You don't have to get them to forget about Epstein. You just need them to not really understand what Epstein was doing. This is why it is so important to separate the facts from the fiction. So like I said, Monday we went through who Jeffrey Epstein is not, and we looked at fake images created by AI. Like I said, we went through some of these emails, many of them certainly eyebrow-raising and concerning, but ambiguous. Some of them completely fake, again, containing errors. Some of them are forgeries. Some of them are just misunderstood. People didn't do the due diligence. Tonight, I want to go into the real Epstein. And like I said, I'm going to paint a picture for you based on the real evidence inside the emails and the real data, which supports the claim, supports the vision of a Jeffrey Epstein who serves a very particular function, which is called the fixer. I don't think that Epstein is somebody who was engaged in magic rituals. I don't think he was somebody that was a religious Satanist. I don't even think, strictly speaking, he was a pedophile. I think he was a pervert. And I think he liked younger girls and probably a sex addict and had eclectic tastes, interest in sadomasochism, interest in pornography and things like that. And I think that what Epstein did for his clients is solve problems. Solving problems using his connections in government, in business, solving problems related to money, but also political problems. Also providing a service, which was that he did traffic women. And so for the rich and powerful, one of the ways that he would get connections to serve his clients was introducing them to women. And the women were younger, but I don't think they were prepubescent. And again, that speaks to what his real role was. The age of the women kind of gives you a clue about what he was actually up to. Were they the youngest women possible because he was just that evil, or were they women who were just young enough where they could be leveraged as blackmail material, young enough where they're attractive to an older man who might not be a total sicko, but just a regular old pervert, I think that tells us what his real function was. So first, I want to talk about this article from Israel Times. It's sort of interesting. One of the things that's said about Epstein is that he's like an Israeli spy. To the extent that people are talking about Epstein's connections in this world, people say that he worked for Mossad. And unfortunately, I think this is really the only word that people know about Israel is Mossad. But as a matter of fact, Israel, like any country, has different factions. They have different intelligence agencies. They have different political parties. They have a right and a left. They have Israeli military intelligence. They have Shin Bet. They have Mossad. What I hear all day long about Epstein is he's Mossad. He's Mossad. He works for Mossad. And it's interesting that since these files have been released by the DOJ last week, the Prime Minister of Israel actually came out and addressed the allegations head on. And Netanyahu said on Twitter yesterday that Epstein did not work for the state of Israel. But it's interesting what he said in particular in denying the claim. So there's all these allegations that Epstein is a Jewish spy, works for Mossad, works for Israel. The Prime Minister of Israel weighs in and says, that's not true. Epstein never worked for Israel. He said the reason why is because Epstein's connections were to Netanyahu's political rival, Ehud Barak. So for those that don't know, Netanyahu is on the political right in Israel. Netanyahu is a lifelong member of the Likud party, which is a far-right party in Israel. And they've been in power virtually the entire time for the last 50 years, with some exceptions. And so Netanyahu, in order to throw off these allegations that Epstein was in any way involved with him or with Israel in general, he says, well, that's impossible because Epstein worked with my political opposition, Ehud Barak, who comes from the left. And Netanyahu says, Ehud Barak, being of the left, is fundamentally opposed to Israel's national interests. This is what Netanyahu had to say. This is from the Times of Israel. It says, quote, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Friday that the, quote, unusual close relationship between former Prime Minister Ehud Barak and Jeffrey Epstein proves the latter was not an Israeli agent. Netanyahu wrote, quote, Jeffrey Epstein's unusual close relationship with Ehud Barak does not suggest Epstein worked for Israel. Actually, it proves the opposite. He writes, stuck on his election loss from over two decades ago, Barak has for years obsessively attempted to undermine Israeli democracy by working with the anti-Zionist radical left in failed attempts to overthrow the elected Israeli government. Barak's personal fixation led him to engage in activities publicly and behind the scenes to undermine the government of Israel, including fueling mass protest movements, fomenting unrest, and feeding false media narratives. The U.S. Justice Department's release of millions of internal documents related to Epstein last week revealed and confirmed his ties to many prominent people in politics, finance, academia, and business, including Barak, who succeeded Netanyahu as prime minister from 1999 to 2001 and then served as Netanyahu's defense minister from 2009 to 2013. There is no evidence of wrongdoing by Barak, a former IDF chief who was Netanyahu's commanding officer in the elite Matkal unit. However, after a previous Justice Department release of Epstein files showed the financier claiming to have advised Barak's 2019 election campaign, Netanyahu in November shared an article from an anti-Israel socialist outlet which suggested, based on Epstein's ties to Barak, that the sex offender had once worked for Israeli intelligence. So this is sort of interesting. Netanyahu gets up and says, there is no proof that Epstein worked for Israel or worked for Mossad. Why? Because Epstein's connection to Israel was a left-wing politician named Ehud Barak. He says, and for that reason, and reason being rather, he said Ehud Barak, being of the political left, stands in opposition against a right-wing government. Ehud Barak is working with the Israeli left to protest the right-wing Israeli government with mass protests and influence campaigns in media. So this would sort of be like if Donald Trump said Epstein could never be in the CIA because he's associated with Bill Clinton, who is anti-American. It would sort of like be the same thing as saying that. Epstein could never be a CIA agent. He could never be an American asset because his only connection to the government was former Democrat President Bill Clinton. And how does that make sense? Well, even though Bill Clinton was the former president, he's an anti-American, radical, left-wing guy. He wants America to be destroyed. It doesn't really make any sense. Ehud Barak was a former prime minister of Israel and served in Netanyahu's government as the defense minister. Epstein's connection to the Israeli government is Ehud Barak. We'll go through some of their connections in a moment. He worked for Netanyahu, was the head of the country, and maybe more importantly than all of that, Ehud Barak was the former head of Israeli military intelligence. Ehud Barak served in the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, and rose through the ranks inside the Israeli intelligence community and eventually became its head at the end of the last century in the 80s and 90s. What's notable about this is that ever since Ehud Barak left politics in the early 2000s, which he did for about a decade, he then became a salesperson for Israeli intelligence companies. He worked with Unit 8200, which is Israeli intelligence, one of their elite units, to infiltrate Silicon Valley. And Unit 8200, Israeli intelligence operatives were sent out in the first two decades of the 21st century into the United States, specifically into California. And they were told to create internet startups, tech startups, so that they could slowly infiltrate the defense technology sector. This effort was spearheaded by Ehud Barak in close proximity to and in association with the Israeli intelligence establishment. This is a story from the Jacobin magazine, a left-wing magazine, about Epstein's ties to Barak. This is what it says. This is based on the files that came out last week. It says, quote, Jacobin looked at more than 1,000 documents from the latest trove and identified more than 60 instances between September 2010 and March 2019 in which Barak and Epstein arranged to meet face-to-face, usually in New York, but other times in Florida, Boston, Paris, or even Epstein's infamous private island, Little St. James. At least seven of those meetings took place while Barak was still serving as Minister of Defense for Israel. That count does not include the dozens more times where the two arranged or tried to arrange to talk over the phone or via video call, nor their frequent email exchanges to each other. It also does not necessarily include the more than two dozen times in that period that Barak stayed at one of Epstein's properties, typically the Upper East Side apartment building on 301 East 66th Street, which he owned and which his staff referred to internally as simply 301. The disclosures add to the recent stream of explosive revelations about Epstein's relationship to Barak and in turn to the Israeli state. Epstein, long rumored to have ties to Israeli intelligence, has in a series of stories by Drop Site News been revealed to have worked with Barak to broker security agreements and arms sales on behalf of Israel. Last year, Jacobin revealed that Epstein had privately claimed to have been behind Barak's 2019 political comeback in Israel. Revelations that, after being tweeted by current Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, caused a firestorm in the country. Okay? So, one of the lesser reported aspects of Epstein's life, people say, well, he is Mossad. People say he is with Israel. And in a certain sense, this is a little bit vague. This is a little bit too broad and general. And I feel like this is not being highlighted at all. What I see all day, all week on TikTok, on Instagram is satanic, satanic. He's a satanic pedophile. He's an occultist. He's a cannibal. He's part of this sort of mysterious, esoteric thing. When you drill down into it, there's nothing esoteric or mysterious at all. he was an operative working not even necessarily with Mossad in particular, but actually with Israel's military. He's working with the IDF. This is according to a left-wing paper, which is probably sympathetic to Israel's Labor Party. It says there are no fewer than 60 instances when they met face-to-face in a 10-year period. Epstein and the former prime minister of Israel, and then even at times when that former prime minister, Ehud Barak, was serving as the defense minister. And like I said, this guy in particular, earlier in his career, was the head of Israeli military intelligence. They together are working alongside each other on arms contracts, surveillance contracts, intelligence contracts to foreign governments all over the world and to Silicon Valley. They're working together on deals with Palantir, deals with Carbine. They're working together on deals in West Africa, all over the world. And so there's not actually a lot of ambiguity about any of this. No spelling errors, typos, anything like that. This is actually the bulk of the emails. This is the substance of what's actually there. Epstein is working hand in glove with the Israeli state and in particular with the Israeli military. But here's a bigger question. So this is raised in the Israeli, in the Times of Israel. Netanyahu tweets about it. He's trying to defend the government of Israel from its connections to Jeffrey Epstein. One other thing that I want to point out about this, because this is actually an important little aside. Whenever you talk about the Jewish issue or the Israel issue, one of the big questions that you hear all the time is, what are we talking about really? When we talk about the Jews, Israel, Zionists, people like to say, is it all Jews or is it just the Zionists? Is it the state of Israel or is it just a faction within the state of Israel, this particular political party or this leader, the current leader and his specific policies as the current prime minister of Israel? And what a lot of people like to say in response to this question is that, well, Jews are not a monolith. And even within the state of Israel, there is so much ideological diversity. You hear this all the time. People say, no, it's not the Jews. They say there is no such thing as the Jews. Why? They say because Jews are not monolithic, meaning that not all Jews think the same, believe the same things, have the same convictions. People say, what about all those Jews that are against the war in Gaza? What about all those Jews that maybe don't even support the existence of Israel? And then take it a step further. People say even Israel isn't monolithic, because there's a right wing in Israel and a left wing in Israel. People say that the right wing in Israel, the Likud party, believes the same things that the Republican party does. On the other side, people say, well, maybe the right wing in Israel supports the genocide, but there are other Jews that do not. What is interesting about these revelations with Epstein is it reveals how little those distinctions actually matter. So, for example, people like to say, well, for example, George Soros. George Soros is a Jew, a billionaire. He's a huge supporter of the American far left, the European far left, mass migration. And he also supports the far left in Israel. And people like to use this as an example to say there's all this diversity. There is no monolith. It is so heterogeneous. They say, and so the existence of a figure like Soros and a figure like Netanyahu, that just goes to show that when we talk about this issue, it is not really based in reality to talk about the Jews as an entity, or even Israel for that matter as an entity. But what Epstein shows us, even though Epstein was working with the left-wing opponent of Netanyahu, it really doesn't matter. Epstein is working with Netanyahu's nemesis. He's working with Ehud Barak, who Netanyahu is fighting against in 2019, who Netanyahu is trying to associate with the Israeli far left in 2019 and yesterday in 2026. Netanyahu and even the Zionists in America, even the pro-Israel Jews in America that are in Trump world, they like to say, see, Epstein was not an agent of Israel. He was working with the Israeli left. He wasn't a Mossad spy. He wasn't working with the Israeli state or Netanyahu. He was working with Ehud Barak. And it is true that Epstein's point of contact was with this person, with Barak. And yet it is a distinction without a difference, because at the end of the day, Ehud Barak was the head of Israel's military intelligence, not the head of left-wing military intelligence. Not he was the head of their intelligence community. He used those connections in Israel, in the United States, but also in other countries to sell Israeli military tech, to infiltrate other governments, other tech companies with Unit 8200 operatives. And he was working with Ehud Barak when Ehud Barak was serving Netanyahu as his defense minister in the latter half of the last decade. So people like to say, well, it's not a monolith. There's a right and left there too. It's not a monolith. They don't all agree. They don't all think the same things. Well, in this case, it's a distinction without any meaningful difference. He was working with the Israeli state, and in particular with their military intelligence, in their campaign to infiltrate the world surveillance states, intelligence agencies, tech industries, and militaries. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, because I want to go even a little bit further on that question in particular. This idea of, what are the Jews? Are they a monolith? Are they to blame? Here's another question. So Epstein has this relationship to the Israeli state with Ehud Barak. And if you actually read the emails, what is Epstein doing? Epstein is putting Ehud Barak on to various tech companies. Epstein is making introductions for Ehud Barak. One of the big introductions he makes is to Peter Thiel. Jeffrey Epstein introduces Ehud Barak to Peter Thiel and tries to get Barak to invest in Peter Thiel's company, Palantir, which is very interesting because for those that are in the know, what Palantir is an algorithm company. It's a metadata company. Their job is to take tons of data and create algorithms and lately using artificial intelligence to interpret vast sums of data. And you could say, well, what is the use of this sort of technology? Well, for the first 8 years of its existence, Palantir was working with the CIA. And so Palantir would take all the data that the CIA collects, all the data that the CIA collects on foreign governments and even on US citizens, all the data they collect from people overseas, billionaires, oligarchs, you name it, it's being fed into Palantir so that they can action the data. And who knows who they're giving that to, if they're giving that to their black sites, their kill squads, their operatives in the field. Then they open it up after 2008 to the FBI. And so now the FBI is using Palantir. When they're going to a crime scene and they're investigating, they're going to run the information and the names, license plates through Palantir software. Where else have we seen this license plate? Where else have we seen some of this information? Recently, under the second Trump administration, Palantir software has been introduced to various government departments and agencies, to the Treasury Department, to the Social Security Administration, Health and Human Services. Ostensibly, it was brought in under the aegis of the DOGE cost-cutting program. In order to cut all the waste, fraud, and abuse, we need to take these vast amounts of data about federal expenditures and beneficiaries, and we need to be able to interpret that data. So who do we bring in? Well, we bring in the PayPal mafia. We bring in Palantir. And even though DOGE is over, the Palantir software remains. And so what was Epstein's role? He was introducing Ehud Barak to Peter Thiel. In other words, introducing the head of Israeli military intelligence who is running a front sending Israeli intelligence operatives into the United States, into Silicon Valley to infiltrate our defense tech sector. Epstein was introducing this person to our American defense tech scion, Peter Thiel, that created this now all-important company, which recently became one of the top 10 biggest tech companies by market cap. And more on that later. We'll actually unpack that in much greater detail later in the show. First, it's very important to understand, how did Jeffrey Epstein get in that position? Where actually did his money come from? Because as always with these people that sort of appear on the scene and have large amounts of money or political clout or connections, you actually have to question how they arrived. You can't start in the middle of the story where Epstein has an island and a townhouse and is friends with everybody and a billionaire. You have to start at the beginning of the story. How did he get his billions? How did he come into possession of a private island? How did he meet all these people? And this answer is actually very simple. Epstein was enriched by two people. For the most part, his vast sums of money, the majority of it came from exactly two clients by the name of Leon Black and Les Wexner, both of them Jewish. First, let's talk about Leon Black. This is a New York Times article about him and his connection to Jeffrey Epstein. And then we'll work through his story and how he got to be rich and how he came to be involved with Epstein. It says, quote, Mr. Epstein had no formal training in tax and estate planning, but after a few years working at an investment bank, he convinced a few business elites to hire him for financial advice. Mr. Black found Mr. Epstein to be impressive and a little mysterious. It wasn't just his ties to the ultra wealthy. He also seemed to always be surrounded by beautiful women. Leon Black told a publication last year, quote, he was almost like a James Bond villain. In 1997, long before Mr. Epstein became a formal advisor to Mr. Black, he and his wife Deborah put Mr. Epstein on the board of directors of their newly created family foundation. A couple years later, Mr. Black and two other Apollo executives donated $500,000 to one of Epstein's nonprofits. Epstein introduced Mr. Black to several young women. Some of the women later accused Mr. Black of abusing them. In 2002, for example, Mr. Epstein arranged for Mr. Black to meet Sherry Pearson, whom Mr. Epstein had paid for massages, according to a lawsuit that Ms. Pearson filed years later and eventually withdrew. She met Mr. Black in Mr. Epstein's townhouse where Mr. Black raped her in the massage room. Mr. Black denied the claim and said he had never met Ms. Pearson. While Mr. Epstein repeatedly rattled off the projects he said he was undertaking for Mr. Black, the actual role that he played, as well as the true value of his work, is unclear. Yet Mr. Epstein told Mr. Black that the work was highly valuable. Ultimately, Mr. Black coughed up the fees that Mr. Epstein requested. The total would reach $170 million in total. By a wide margin, Mr. Black was Mr. Epstein's greatest source of income after 2012. The runner-up was the French banker Ariane de Rothschild, who paid Mr. Epstein at least $15 million. So when you think about these sums of money, after 2012, Leon Black gives him $170 million. The next biggest client is only $15 million and happens to be a member of the Rothschild family. So you have Leon Black, Jewish financier, head of Apollo Global Management. Runner-up is the Rothschilds. Mr. Epstein also gave Mr. Black access to his Rolodex. Over the years, he connected him with Bill Gates and Stephen Bannon. He introduced one of Mr. Black's sons to Woody Allen to learn about film editing. Mr. Black, meanwhile, donated millions to one of Mr. Epstein's charities. Some work that Mr. Epstein performed for Mr. Black required the utmost discretion. For instance, he helped him keep a long-running extramarital affair under wraps. So this is where Epstein gets his money. How did he get rich? How did he become a billionaire? He gets it from ultra-wealthy Jewish financial clients. And think about this relationship. Epstein says that he's a tax genius. This is the cover story. that Epstein is a brilliant financier, a math whiz. And he is so intelligent, in particular with math, but also with financial instruments and tax laws and offshore bank accounts. He is worth billions to his clients. And so this is why, allegedly, his handful of clients are giving him hundreds of millions of dollars. But it goes further than that. Epstein is effectively given a blank check. He can ask for these huge sums of money and they cough it up. He's on the board of their foundations. He's handling even their personal affairs, literally their extramarital affairs, introducing them to their girlfriends. And you got to wonder, so what is really going on here? Well, it's pretty obvious. Jeffrey Epstein is probably not a math genius. He's probably not a financial wizard. He probably isn't an expert on the tax code. What he is a fixer. What he is somebody who introduces people to women and then maybe uses that as blackmail. Or that's just one of the services that he provides. It's hard actually to know where the one begins, where the one ends, and the other begins. He introduces Leon Black to a woman who eventually accuses him of assault and abuse. Epstein also helps Black cover up an extramarital affair. So what is he actually? Is he somebody that's providing women to billionaires as one of his many services? Making introductions, making political problems go away, making tax problems go away, introducing people to the managers of offshore bank accounts. And maybe that is separate from or in the service of also blackmailing them too. If you know the financial crimes that a person is involved in, if you know the sexual crimes that a person is involved in, it also gives you leverage over that person. And unlike a traditional lawyer, you don't necessarily have that confidentiality understanding. If you go to a billionaire like Leon Black or Les Wexner, who we'll talk about in a moment, and you're trying to implement a tax avoidance scheme, you're working your connections with Israel, working your connections with people in the Caribbean, in the United Kingdom, in the Gulf. If you know, so to speak, where the financial bodies are buried, also you know a person's sexual crimes, it gives you considerable leverage and you can ask for $150 million in payment, even if you're not even necessarily that good at your job or providing great services. Maybe Jeffrey Epstein is not offering $150 million in value for his tax advice, but it's $150 million in solving other kinds of problems that may even be of his own creation. I want to talk a little bit also, though, about Leon Black and his connections, just to give you an idea. So Leon Black's father is a man by the name of Eli Black. His real name is Elihu Blackowitz, spelled B-L-A-C-H-O-W-I-C-Z. Now, Leon Black, his son, is the head of Apollo Global Management. He's a huge financier. Apollo Management is a big private equity firm. If you were uninitiated, you would look at this guy and say, oh, Leon Black, that's kind of a cool name. You wouldn't even think anything of it, right? Well, the real name is Blackowitz. It's a Polish Jewish name. His father is named Elihu Blackowitz, immigrated to the U.S. from Poland. His father was the head of one of these corporate rating conglomerates. He took over the United Fruit Company, which was involved in the Caribbean in the 1970s. He committed suicide in 1975 because he tried to bribe the government of Honduras. And when it was found out, he knew he was going to jail. So he went to the top floor of the Pan Am building, threw his briefcase out the window, and then jumped and committed suicide. That's who these people are. That's the father of Leon Black, one of Jeffrey Epstein's, maybe his first or second biggest clients. Either his first or second biggest benefactor, his father is Eli Blackowitz, literally a criminal, a corporate criminal who is sort of involved in the exact same kinds of activities, tries to bribe the government of Honduras, gets found out, commit suicide. Who is Leon Black? Well, Leon Black got his start at Apollo Global Management, which is the 29th largest private equity firm right now. He formed Apollo Management in 1990 after he departed another financial firm, which was called Drexel, Burnham, and Lambert. That company collapsed when its founder, named Michael Milken, was charged for all kinds of violations with the SEC. Fraud, racketeering, insider trading, all kinds of problems. Michael Milken was also a Jew. So go figure. You have Leon Black's father is a Jew from Poland. He tries to bribe the government of Honduras. He commits suicide. Leon Black gets involved with Michael Milken, who's another criminal. They call them the Junk Bond King. And he's basically running a criminal financial enterprise. He's another Jew. He goes down. When that firm explodes, Leon Black starts a new firm. And using the clients from his pre-existing business with this Milken character, he gets $400 million in investments. He founds Apollo Global Management with another Jew named Mark Rowan. Now, what's interesting is that Mark Rowan is a huge supporter of the Trump administration. In the year 2020, the Trump administration pardoned Michael Milken, who had been in prison for the previous 30 years. So think about the layers to this. Leon Black, his father's a Jewish financial criminal. His mentor is a Jewish financial criminal. He uses his connections to these financial criminals to start a huge private equity firm, $400 million in investments off the rip. He starts it with a Jewish business partner. 30 years later, that Jewish business partner gives the Trump campaign $1 million, and Trump pardons Leon Black's mentor. This is how it works. This is the stuff of the Epstein network. But it gets better. Mark Rowan, who again is Leon Black's partner, gets Trump to pardon this guy. He also happens to be on the board of the Gaza Peace Board, which was created in October of last year to create this smart city in the ruins of the Gaza Strip. These are the connections. Now, Leon Black's son, Benjamin, is the head of the Development Finance Corporation in the Trump administration. And this is a piece from an article that he wrote with Joe Lonsdale. It's called How to Doge U.S. Foreign Aid. This is Leon Black's kid, Benjamin. He writes, beyond the absurd mission drift, aid dollars from USAID prop up corruption and even terrorism. In recent years, the U.S. has funneled hundreds of million dollars to the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, the UNRWA, which was defunded in 2024, only to find its employees and infrastructure implicated in the October 7th terrorist attack on our ally Israel. In Afghanistan, over $3 billion in aid vanished into unaccounted for cash disbursements. In Yemen, most aid either has been seized by or diverted to Houthi loyalists. And before Assad's fall in Syria, donor funds were routinely siphoned off by the Assad regime, with much of the aid stolen by its cronies. So Leon Black's kid is running the Development Finance Corporation, which in collaboration with Joe Lonsdale is calling for the UNRWA, which is the organization that is allocating all the relief money for Palestine, to be defunded. People are talking about cannibalism. They're talking about Baal. They're talking about satanic sex cult rituals. Meanwhile, all of this is happening in plain sight. This is the milieu that Jeffrey Epstein moved in. These are the connections. So to summarize very quickly on Leon Black, because I know this is a lot of information, Jeffrey Epstein's number one benefactor from 2012 by far, and it isn't even close, is Leon Black, head of Apollo Global Management. Leon Black gave Epstein $170 million, most likely was being blackmailed. What Leon Black provided for Epstein was not only huge sums of money, like I said, almost $200 million, but also opened up his Rolodex to Epstein, introduced him to Bill Gates, introduced him to Steve Bannon, probably tons of other people. And more likely than not, because Epstein introduced Leon Black to his girlfriend, because Epstein was helping Leon Black cover up his tax avoidance scheme, help cover up his extramarital affair, more likely than not, Epstein was getting money from this person through blackmail. Leon Black is deeply entrenched in New York City, in the financial industry, and through his partner, Mark Rowan, and his son, Benjamin Black, inside the Trump administration. His partner, Mark Rowan, is on the Gaza Peace Advisory Board, gave Trump $1 million, got Leon Black's mentor off the hook, and Leon Black's kid is the head of the Development Finance Corporation, which, for those that don't know, that is our version of the Belt and Road Initiative. It coordinates $80 billion a year in private sector investments by the U.S. government. He's working with Joe Lonsdale effectively to cut aid to Palestine. Uncle Mark is on the Gaza Peace Advisory Board, making sure that the Palestinians are deported, making sure that Gaza turns into a smart city with Jared Kushner. While the son Benjamin is working with Founders Fund head, Stanford Review head, Palantir founding father Joe Lonsdale, to cut foreign aid to the Houthis, cut foreign aid to the Palestinians, cut foreign aid to the Assad regime, which at the time was allied with Iran. This is what we're talking about. This is the network. Netanyahu's defense minister is Ehud Barak. He has 60 meetings with Epstein in the 2010s while Epstein is getting money from Leon Black, while Leon Black's business partner is giving millions to Trump, while his son is sitting at the head of America's Belt and Road Initiative, controlling $80 billion in U.S. private equity or venture capital, which is being funneled with the help of Peter Thiel's, practically his son-in-law, Joe Lonsdale. This is the real Jeffrey Epstein. But I mentioned before there's two main benefactors. Leon Black is only one of them. The other big benefactor of Jeffrey Epstein is a man by the name of Les Wexner, who comes from Ohio. And we'll read through. This is a report about Les Wexner's connection to Jeffrey Epstein. Arguably, this one is even more extensive. It says, quote, in 1988, Epstein founded J. Epstein & Company, a consulting firm that provided money management services to individuals with a net worth of more than $1 billion. His only major client for some 20 years was the billionaire retail magnate Leslie H. Wexner, who founded a conglomerate that at various times owned retail companies including Victoria's Secret, Bath & Body Works, Abercrombie & Fitch, and Lane Bryant. Wexner also sold Epstein the luxurious Manhattan townhouse, which he used. Epstein had nearly limitless access to Wexner's wealth, serving as his power of attorney, and was able to buy, sell, and borrow in Wexner's name. The relationship with Wexner was important in another key way. The fact that the billionaire had hired Epstein to give him an imprimatur of respectability. Epstein's affiliation with Wexner opened doors for the relationships with the rich and powerful that Epstein would cultivate in the 1990s and early 21st century. Ultimately, Wexner and Epstein had a falling out, and Wexner has said that he fired Epstein in 2007. So in the early 1990s, Les Wexner gave Epstein hundreds of millions of dollars, basically gave him access to his checkbook, put him at the head of the Wexner Foundation, gave him power of attorney, sold him the townhouse for a dollar, gave him a private jet. Like Leon Black, we have to ask the question, who is Les Wexner? Leon Black was this Jewish financial person who was connected to all sorts of criminals. Father was a criminal. mentor was a criminal, business partner is Jewish, connected to Trump, son is Jewish, connected to Trump. Les Wexner offered maybe the other half of the money. Between Leon Black and Les Wexner, they probably contributed over $500 million, maybe upwards of $700 million to Jeffrey Epstein. Well, here's a little snippet from the Wexner Foundation. I'm just going to read this to you. Zero introduction. This is from the Wexner Foundation website. It says, quote, close to 150 Wexnerim came together at the height of our gathering last Sunday night during the AIPAC policy conference in Washington, D.C. A good time was had by all as people across all of our programs networked and were prompted to share an impactful takeaway from their day with someone they didn't know. During the conference, our fellows, members, and alumni could be seen everywhere as experts leading sessions, as professionals within AIPAC, as heads of Hillels and synagogues bringing their activists, and as captains of lobbying teams going up to the Hill. During a conference that brings together 18,000 people, it was a joy to see so many familiar faces and to see the commitment, strategy, and love for Israel and evidence from so many from our Wexner network. This is the Wexner Foundation that Jeffrey Epstein was on the board of. What is the Wexner Foundation? Les Wexner forms up a nonprofit, and they have a few different programs, the Wexner Graduate Fellowship, the Senior Leaders Program. What the Wexner Foundation basically does is they go to Jewish fraternities, the Jewish Hillel Society on college campuses. They go into businesses, and they look for up-and-coming Jewish leaders. And the Wexner Foundation sends them to Israel, gets them together at conferences, for example, at AIPAC's annual summit. And these people are effectively groomed, given networking opportunities, mentorship, so that they can rise through the ranks of upper society. This is the foundation that Jeffrey Epstein is involved in. This is Les Wexner's foundation. It's basically, you know, we talk about what we're trying to do with the Groypers. We're trying to get people involved, infiltrate the institutions, long march through the institutions. Les Wexner has been funding these types of activities for 30 years. And all you have to do is go on their website. They're talking about bringing together the giant Les Wexner network, which consists of college graduates, members of the Hillel Society, business leaders, and they're all coming together and meeting at AIPAC. But it gets even better than that. Les Wexner also founded a group 30 years ago, which you might have heard before. I've talked about it on the show, I think last year when I did my expose on Jeffrey Epstein, called the Study Group. The Study Group was created in the 1990s. It's a loose confederation of Jewish billionaires. It's called the Study Group. Other times it's called the Mega Group. And basically the purpose of it is to advance the cause of Israel and public diplomacy for Israel in the United States. This is a little blurb about it. It says, quote, in 1991, Les Wexner co-founded a philanthropic organization of Jewish billionaires known as the Mega Group, which uses some of its vast resources to shape Middle East policy. In 2003, Wexner's foundation commissioned GOP messaging guru Frank Luntz to advise American Jewish leaders on how to rally support for Israel. Luntz's recommendation stated, quote, for a year, a solid year, you should be invoking the name of Saddam Hussein and how Israel was always behind American efforts to rid the world of this ruthless dictator and liberate their people. So Les Wexner brings together all the Jewish billionaires, and they put money behind Birthright Israel. They put money behind Frank Luntz, who's a marketing analyst. He also created the phrase Most Moral Army, did a lot of the marketing research on the 2014 war in Gaza, but also all the way back to 2003, promoting the war in Iraq and talking up the Jewish and pro-Israel involvement in the drive to the war in Iraq. Frank Luntz also happens to be the former roommate of Kevin McCarthy, who was the Speaker of the House from 2022 until 2023. So Les Wexler brings this group together. Another member of the mega group is Ronald Lauder. Ronald Lauder is another Jewish billionaire. He's the heir to the Estee Lauder fortune. You might remember that Ronald Lauder was one of the billionaires that got the University of Pennsylvania president fired because she tolerated a pro-Palestine protest on her campus. Ronald Lauder is the current head of the World Jewish Congress. Ronald Lauder is also a close ally of the Trump administration. And we'll get into some of his Trump admin ties. But he also happened to be deeply involved with Jeffrey Epstein himself. This is the latest article about him, about some of the revelations from the files that came out last week. It says, quote, Ronald Lauder, a powerful art collector who has patronized institutions such as the Museum of Modern Art, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Getty Trust, and the World Monuments Funds, appears more than 900 times in the set of Jeffrey Epstein-related files that were released by the DOJ at the end of January. Lauder, the heir to the Estee Lauder company, appears to have met with Epstein multiple times in 2017. While there is no direct communication between Lauder and Epstein, their respective assistants emailed frequently to discuss the arrangement of meals and phone calls for them. Epstein and Lauder were often looped into those email chains. How many times the two met or even if they ended up meeting at all remains unclear from the emails, which suggests that Lauder's schedule forced his assistant to frequently change their appointments. But Gmail calendar reminders for Epstein implied that the two did at least get some meetings on the books. What they discussed also remains unclear, with just one email offering a vague hint. In a 2017 message from Epstein's assistant to Lauder's, Epstein's assistant mentions that Epstein is seeking a conversation to offer best guidance. Epstein's assistant mentions that he wants to see 2 years of tax returns by Lauder, as well as his will. The cosmetics magnate's assistant writes, quote, I have given Mr. Lauder your message. Other documents show that Epstein may have played a role in Lauder's art-related dealings with Leon Black, another major art collector with whom Epstein worked closely. In 2014, a representative for Black emailed Epstein an agreement guiding a loan agreement for a Kurt Schwitter's work. It said Leon and Ronald Lauder decided Ronald will have the first possession, period, said the email. For those that don't know, Ronald Lauder donated $5 million to Trump's super PAC in 2025. And this has also been in the news recently. Ronald Lauder's son-in-law is a man by the name of Kevin Warsh. He was just nominated to be the chair of the Federal Reserve of the United States of America. Okay. So to recap on Les Wexner, Les Wexner is Jeffrey Epstein's other benefactor. He really got him his start. Les Wexner opened up his checkbook, gave him the New York townhouse, probably gave him $300 million, $400 million. Les Wexner, being Epstein's client, gave him legitimacy. It allowed Epstein to go and make introductions. He had access to Les Wexner's Rolodex, gave him credibility in the industry. Les Wexner's foundation is creating a network of Jews that are going to AIPAC, taking birthright trips to Israel. His foundation sponsored pro-Iraq war propaganda, which was specifically ideologically Zionist. Les Wexner also founded the Mega Group, which is a pro-Israel group of billionaires. One of the members is Ronald Lauder, who also dealt with Epstein. Lauder is the chair of the World Jewish Congress, gave $5 million to Trump's super PAC, and his son-in-law is Trump's nominee to be the chair of the Federal Reserve. This is where Epstein came from. This is how Epstein made his money. People say, how did Epstein get so rich? Where did Epstein come from? This is the real Epstein. Given hundreds of millions by Leon Black and Les Wexner, that's how he made all of his connections, and then, of course, leveraged these connections off of each other. By meeting Les Wexner, he was able to meet a bunch of other people. By meeting a bunch of other people, he was able to leverage those connections to his clients. By having access to the Victoria's Secret modeling agency, he's able to groom girls. And that's another point of access. And all these people that he's leveraging one after the other, well, they all have one thing in common. They're all Jewish. And whether they support the Israeli left or the Israeli right, they're all pro-Israel. From the year 2000 until the year 2025, they're supporting Israel. In 2003, the Wexner Foundation and the mega group are pushing the war in Iraq. But also as late as 2025, Joe Lonsdale, the Jewish head of Peter Thiel's Founders Fund, and Ben Black, Leon Black's son, are writing an op-ed about how they're going to use Trump's Development Finance Corporation to take money away from USAID so it doesn't fall into the hands of the UNRWA, which is supporting Palestine and humanitarian relief in Yemen, because it falls into the hands of the Houthi rebels. Okay, that's the connection. That's the big story. There's another connection, however, because when we talk about Epstein and this scam that he's running, where he says that he's this financial wizard, and that's why he's able to charge his clients hundreds of millions of dollars, which, by the way, is totally out of the ordinary. You might think that it's all relative, it's all proportionate, that if you're a billionaire, you can afford to pay $100 million a year for tax advice or estate planning, this sort of thing. That is so out of the ordinary. Even some of the biggest accounting firms don't make that kind of money. And so what that would suggest is that Epstein either isn't really a money manager or he's something more than a money manager. If you're being paid 2, 3, 5, 10 times more money to do taxes for a billionaire than some of the highest and most elite accounting firms, there's a reason you're paying the premium. And you're paying that premium either because you're doing something criminal or you're paying that premium because Epstein has leverage over you. But those are really the only two reasons. And those reasons are deeply related. Because, of course, if Epstein is doing something criminal in nature or political, which is criminal, if Epstein is helping you set up a tax avoidance scheme, if he's doing something that allows you to cook the books in some way, well, that's why you pay him more money. It also happens to be the case that if he goes away unhappy, well, he knows where the bodies are buried. So you're also paying him to be happy. You're also paying him, as Leon Black did, even if you're frustrated with him, even if you think he's charging you too much because he knows about all your business. But where did that myth that Epstein is a genius come from? Because it's actually interesting. You have this story that Epstein was able to get all this money because he's a charmer. He's a charismatic guy, really intelligent. And if he's such a tax genius, if he's such a tax wizard, what would be the basis of that skill? Legitimate question. Fundamentally, what is the skill that makes you a finance wizard, a tax wizard? It's a mathematical ability. So where did this idea come from that he had this incredible mathematical ability? Well, we can go back even further. Forget for a second about Leon Black and Les Wexner and Ronald Lauder, who all dealt with Epstein for the past 30 years, you can go back 50 years. Because where Epstein got his start was as a math and science teacher at the Dalton School, a very prestigious private school for the elites. And this is known, but there's a little lesser known fact about this. Jeffrey Epstein was hired at the Dalton School in the 1970s by a man named Donald Barr. Donald Barr, for those that don't know, is the father of Bill Barr. Bill Barr was Trump's attorney general in his first term. And specifically, Bill Barr was the attorney general, the head of the Department of Justice in 2019 when Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. So that's how you might know that name. Bill Barr is the son of Donald Barr. Donald Barr was the headmaster of the Dalton School when Jeffrey Epstein was hired there as a math teacher. Well, did you know, not only was Donald Barr a member of the OSS, a precursor to the CIA, but he was also born Jewish? See, I had no idea, because this is a Catholic family. Donald Barr eventually converted to Catholicism, but I didn't even know Donald Barr was actually born into a Jewish family. So go figure. Jeff Epstein gets his start at an elite private school, more on that in a moment, as a math and science teacher. He's hired by a Jewish former OSS operative, even though he had no prior experience. He's not a teacher. He doesn't have a great degree. In other words, he's not qualified for the job. And yet anyway, he's hired at the school. Well, why does this matter? Because the first job that Jeffrey Epstein got, he got because he tutored the children of somebody who worked at Bear Stearns. And so Alan Greenberg, who was a very high-level executive at Bear Stearns, his children went to this school. Jeffrey Epstein was their math teacher and tutored them privately. And it was through that connection to Greenberg that Epstein was able to get into Bear Stearns. And from Bear Stearns, he was able to pitch himself to Les Wexner as some kind of financial analyst. Do you see how this stuff is established? And what you find when you go back to the beginning of the story, once you work through all these connections, is that Jeffrey Epstein is a creation of Jewish higher society in education, in finance, in government, even arguably in the arts, in culture. At the Dalton School, which is a school for the elites, this is where all the rich people's children go to study. So if you're a billionaire, if you work at Bear Stearns, if you work at Goldman Sachs, if you're a senator from New York, your kids are going to go to a school like this. And the superintendent of that school controls the faculty. The faculty interface with the children of the elites. That's a connection. And you can see how Epstein got in the middle of that and leveraged one thing into the next. Who knows how he got that job through Donald Barr? Probably Jeffrey Epstein was involved in some way in intelligence from the beginning. And he was planted there by Donald Barr. Planted there at that school to make that connection. Hey, Greenberg, nice to meet you. Wow, you got some great kids here. Say, I'm Jeffrey Epstein. But who knows what happened there? Somehow he finds himself at Bear Stearns. Now you're in. Now he's a financial wizard, probably using help from his intelligence connections. Or who knows exactly what's going on there. But then he begins to pitch himself to clients. He starts his own firm. Now he's friends with Les Wexner. Oh, this is a great guy. Jeff Epstein's my best friend, such and such. And Les Wexner introduces him to all of his clients and furnishes him with a house and a plane and hundreds of millions of dollars and a position on a foundation. Now you're a financier. Now you're a socialite. Now you're at the table. Leverages that into a relationship with Leon Black and the rest of them. And now you're everywhere. Now you're doing arms deals and surveillance deals with Ehud Barak and Unit 8200. Now you're doing art deals with Ronald Lauder and Leon Black and the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Now you're doing deals with Peter Thiel. Now you're doing deals with film producers. Leon Black's kid, Ben, wants to learn how to make movies. He introduces him to Woody Allen, because who are the film producers behind Woody Allen? Jewish Hollywood producers. It's all connected like this. And so this is the real, it's actually, in a way, mundane. It's actually more mundane than you might think. But this is the real Jeffrey Epstein. He's not a satanic pedophile occultist. To the extent that that's happening, in my opinion, that is perhaps a novelty, a curiosity of the elites. And, you know, maybe that exists on some level. I'm not necessarily denying it outright. I'm just saying that is not necessarily supported. And to the extent that it is real, it seems to be peripheral. And some people might find that shocking. I don't actually believe most of the people involved in this are actually true religious occultists. What is really going on here is that this is a financial network. It is a Jewish political intelligence financial network. And you can see that every step of the way. From Donald Barr to Alan Greenberg at Bear Stearns to Les Wexner and his mega group and his foundation to Leon Black at Apollo and all of his pedigree, his mentor, his dad, his business partner, his kid, all the way through to the connections that were made in the 2000s, in the 2010s. Every other part of the story that we know, that's the real story. I also want to talk about Epstein's connection to Peter Thiel. This is something else that was revealed in the emails, and I'll tell you why this is so interesting. So one of the other big developments that we heard from the files is that Epstein actually had a big relationship with Peter Thiel. And this is a story from the New York Times. We'll read through it, and then we'll talk about the significance. It says, quote, "By 2014, Mr. Epstein took an interest in Palantir and at one point suggested to Ehud Barak, former Israeli prime minister, that he speak with Mr. Thiel about an advisory role at Palantir. Mr. Epstein was scheduled to meet with Mr. Thiel several times in 2014 and by that year had started emailing the venture capitalist for investment advice. That October, he asked Mr. Thiel if Palantir was doing a round of financing before asking Mr. Thiel whether he should invest $100 million in Spotify. In response, Thiel emailed him to hold off on investing in Spotify. He said, somewhat more bullish on Palantir, but I don't think there's a rush. Epstein did ultimately invest $40 million in one of Mr. Thiel's venture capital firms, Valar Ventures, across two separate transactions. Mr. Epstein's estate still possesses these holdings, which were worth about $170 million as of last summer." So Peter Thiel was involved with Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein tried to get Ehud Barak a board position at Palantir, which is deeply disturbing because, like we talked about, Palantir is involved in many government departments and agencies since Trump got into office in a second term. Trump has a close relationship with Peter Thiel, and Palantir and the other suite of Thiel companies has become very important to the Department of Defense and the National Security Council. Epstein was trying to get Ehud Barak past the goalie, trying to get him involved in America's defense tech sector, and Thiel was going to be the nexus for that. Epstein did invest $40 million with Thiel. Thiel has that money. Thiel invested that money. It's now worth $170 million. So he is financially connected to Epstein. Now, what is Peter Thiel's real connection to the Trump administration? It's not actually, strictly speaking, the $1 million that Thiel gave him in 2016 or that Thiel funded primary opponents against the Republicans that voted to impeach Trump in 2021. The real connection is through, of course, J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance, the current vice president, owes his entire life to Peter Thiel. It was Peter Thiel that got J.D. Vance his first job in Silicon Valley, then got him his first job in venture capital, then hired him at his venture capital firm, then funded J.D. Vance's venture capital firm. Then when J.D. Vance wanted to run for Senate, Peter Thiel gave him $15 million and secured the Trump endorsement for him. In 2024, it was Peter Thiel, Elon Musk, and Tucker Carlson that pleaded with Donald Trump to make J.D. Vance his vice presidential nominee. So J.D. Vance, who currently is a heartbeat away from the presidency, is clearly indebted to Peter Thiel, and they have a very close relationship. Peter Thiel has a financial interest, let's say, in J.D. Vance, and vice versa. And Thiel is involved with Epstein. Now, there's another layer to this that people are actually missing because people think that it begins and ends there. People think that Epstein invested money with Thiel. Epstein tried to introduce Ehud Barak to Thiel. Thiel invested in Vance. Vance is the VP. This is the connection. But it goes deeper than this, because there's a lot of other things that are going on there. For example, where did J.D. Vance get elected senator? This is actually really important. These are the details people tend to miss. He wasn't elected the senator from Florida or New York or Texas. Vance was elected senator from Ohio. Okay? Vance was elected senator from the state of Ohio. He moved back to Ohio in order to run for that seat. He comes from Ohio. Who else is running in the state of Ohio right now? Vivek Ramaswamy. Vivek Ramaswamy was a Yale Law School classmate of J.D. Vance. Some say that J.D. Vance's son is named after Vivek Ramaswamy because of that relationship. And currently, Vivek is running for governor in Ohio. How is Vivek able to run for governor there? Because the lieutenant governor of Ohio, who would run in 2026 because his current governor's term limited, he was appointed to fill J.D. Vance's Senate seat. So Vance is elected to the Ohio Senate seat in 22 with the help of Peter Thiel. Vance leaves that seat in 2024. Who fills the seat? Well, they arrange in the Republican Party for the lieutenant governor to take the seat so that the governor's race in 2026 is wide open. That allows Vivek Ramaswamy to run, and that is going to be supported by J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance's team is going to be helping Vivek Ramaswamy's governor campaign. I imagine that entire Little Tech network is supporting him. All the usual suspects. And who is going to open up a factory in Ohio? Well, Palmer Luckey's Anduril. Palmer Luckey's Anduril is a drone manufacturer. Palmer Luckey was rescued by Peter Thiel when he was fired from Facebook. Peter Thiel gave him a second chance. And actually, when Peter Thiel invested in Anduril, that investment was handled by J.D. Vance when he was working for Peter Thiel. You see how this works? So Thiel created Palmer Luckey. Thiel created Vance. Thiel makes Vance the senator. Vance takes the competitor out of the race. That lets Vivek run. And then when Vivek controls the state, then they're going to build the drone company that was funded by Thiel through Vance working at that venture capital firm. In other words, they got roots in Ohio. Well, guess who else is from the state of Ohio, aside from J.D. Vance, Vivek Ramaswamy, and soon to be Palmer Luckey? Who else is operating in Ohio? Well, I actually mentioned it earlier. It's Les Wexner. For those that are not deeply involved in politics, you might not know this, but Les Wexner practically runs the state of Ohio. He's got a net worth of almost $10 billion, and he and his wife and his foundation are huge political benefactors in that state. And it is said that you simply cannot run and win without his help. And it is not confirmed, but it has been rumored for many years. This is not a fact. This is a rumor that Les Wexner and his wife hosted a fundraiser for J.D. Vance at their home for his Senate run in 2022. What is confirmed is that Les Wexner and his wife made a multi-million dollar contribution to an Ohio-based political PAC called With Honor that J.D. Vance was on the board of in 2019. And so this is going to be the question that needs to be asked in 2028. Did J.D. Vance have any dealings with Les Wexner? And what is his current relationship with Peter Thiel? Because common sense would dictate that J.D. Vance did not get that Senate seat without a go-ahead, without a green light, without at least the tacit approval. It is true that there was no direct contribution from Les Wexner and his wife to Vance. There is no super PAC contribution, but it has been rumored that that did come together. There was a fundraiser, and almost certainly they're running in the same circles, being from the same state. And that's not a coincidence. As J.D. Vance approaches 2028 and tries to run for office. And so when you take a look at that entire picture, I'm painting a picture for you that goes all the way back to 1976 through to 2028 with the ascendancy of J.D. Vance. And what you find actually exists in these emails, what there is evidence for, what can be corroborated over and over again, and this is sourced thoroughly from financial reports, from testimony, from the actual emails that were released last week. When you paint the picture of Jeffrey Epstein's life, you see a Jewish fixer. You see a Jewish fixer that was born in America, but that dealt with every country, that dealt with the Rothschilds in continental Europe, that dealt with the British, that dealt with Ehud Barak in Israel, that dealt with the Americans, that dealt with the right and the left, that dealt with people like Ronald Lauder and people like Leon Black, connected to Mark Rowan, who are supporters of Trump, but also connected to Bill Clinton, also connected to others that were boosters for the Democratic Party. Jeffrey Epstein, leveraging his connections as an in-betweener that existed in between all these spaces, had connections to the arts. Because who finances the major art museums? Jewish billionaires. Who finances the Hollywood movies? Jewish billionaires. He had connections to finance and banks, because who runs the major private equity firms, venture firms? Who runs the actual banks? Jewish billionaires. He had connections to governments, because who runs politics? Jewish billionaire donors, Jewish lawyers like Alan Dershowitz, other Jewish fixers that exist in between. This is the real story of Jeffrey Epstein. When you shed a light on these 3 million emails that came out of the DOJ, what you don't find actually is any smoking gun about ritual satanic abuse. Sorry, you might suspect that. You might have a hunch, and you might even be right. I don't think it's crazy, actually, to think that that might be going on. But what you do not have in the files, what is not in the files, is any smoking gun about that. There's actually no concrete evidence. What people have at this point in time are photos of Epstein with children that are his goddaughter. Maybe it's family friends. It's certainly nothing that's actually explicit. What you find are a handful of emails like, "I like the torture video." Concerning, but ambiguous, vague by definition. So what is not in the files is anything smoking gun about all of that. The most extraordinary maximalist claims about pedophile islands and satanic pedos and occult cabals, it just isn't in there. If it was, I'd be covering it on the show. If it was, we'd be talking about it. We'd be investigating. It's just not there. Millions and millions and millions of documents, emails, tips, pictures, videos, tons of stuff. It's not there. The evidence isn't there and it's not corroborated. What is there are hundreds and hundreds of emails with Ronald Lauder, Leon Black, Ehud Barak, Les Wexner. What is there is what is transparent and obvious, which is that our society is clearly leveraged and manipulated and influenced by elite Jews in every sector of society, but primarily and at the top, the richest Jews. The Jewish billionaires that control the most important financial firms, and it seems that everything proceeds from their influence. Their money, which flows into the elite universities, the private schools, the Ivy Leagues, their money, which flows into the Hollywood studios and gives them cultural cachet and clout and influence, their money, which flows into the art museums, which serves as a form of money laundering, their money, which flows into and controls modeling agencies, which, coupled with the influence in Hollywood, provides opportunities to attractive women who can then be leveraged in themselves for further connections and influence as prostitutes. their money, which flows into politics in the form of political donations to campaigns, which buys influence, not just in Congress, but also in the regulatory agencies, and for which there is a great deal of arbitrage. That influence in one country can actually give you leeway in another jurisdiction. Having influence in one country or influence in a nation where you can start an offshore bank account can be leveraged in a third country. And it all proceeds down from Jewish billionaires working together and deploying their capital in a strategic way. Yes, there are people that are richer. Yes, there are people that are richer than Leon Black and Les Wexner, but they are not working together, mobilizing and using and deploying their capital, using their resources for these political purposes. You don't actually need $400 billion. You need the right person in the right place. A few hundred million here and there, buying a prostitute, buying a New York City townhouse, buying an island, a donation to a university, a donation to an art museum, buying a film, having access to an actor. It is the way in which they use these things. It is the organized way, the organized manner in which Jews act as a collective, which is the source of their power. And it is always to advance Jewish interests. That is what Jeffrey Epstein represents from start to finish. He's connecting Ehud Barak to Palantir. Why? Ehud Barak is the head of Israeli military intelligence. If he has a seat on the board of Palantir and Palantir's Gotham software is at our Social Security Administration, Treasury Department, CIA, FBI, NSA, NIH, well, we have a world of problems, don't we? And if Jeffrey Epstein is working with Ronald Lauder and working with Leon Black and working with Les Wexner, all these billionaires are supporting the war in Iraq. They're infiltrating the Trump administration to cut aid to Palestine. They're on the board of the Gaza Advisory Peace Board. Going all the way back to 1990, everywhere you see Epstein, you see a Jewish billionaire. And everywhere you see one of those Jewish billionaires, you see millions of dollars pouring into grooming Jewish leaders, advocacy for the state of Israel, and political lobbying in the U.S. government. That is the real story of Jeffrey Epstein. And that's the part that I don't see a lot of people covering. And I almost start to wonder if that is a layered conspiracy in and of itself. Because I watched Ian Carroll interview with Tucker Carlson today, and I didn't hear any mention of any of this. Ian Carroll did a Zoom interview with Tucker Carlson today, and this was supposed to be their take on the 3 million Epstein files. It was 60 minutes, and I didn't hear anything about any of this. You heard about Pizzagate and Seth Rich and Julian Assange and the Podestas, and why are they always talking about pizza, and why are they talking about hot dogs? I don't know. It's coded language. But all of that seems like a giant diversion from what is staring us in the face. 60 minutes about Seth Rich, Julian Assange, Pizzagate, which happened, by the way, 8 years ago. Pizzagate has been out there. Those WikiLeaks emails, they have been out there. They've been scrutinized. And I'm not saying we got to the bottom of it, but it's not like that's new information. This stuff about Jeffrey Epstein, this is actually there. It's not coded. It's not ambiguous. It is staring you in the face. And what it is this is the essence of organized Jewry working in America, working in society. It is transnational. It's not necessarily monolithic, but it is directed. It is focused in one direction. And there is a sense of camaraderie among them. There is a sense of identity and insularity. They talk about the outsiders as goyim. Goyim in abundance. I can't believe that there's all these goyim. Goyim don't know how to make money. That's the essence of what's going on here. And that's the part that no one wants to say out loud. Tucker says it's got nothing to do with Jews. Nothing at all. It's about the state of Israel, and it's about the particular government in Israel. No, it's not. Whether it's Ehud Barak or Netanyahu, they're part of the same thing. And whether it's Ronald Lauder or George Soros, they are in effect part of the same thing. And that thing is called world Jewry, organized Jewry. Yes, it is the Jews. No, they are not pagan gypsies. They are not Khazarians. They are not Frankists. They are not neocons. They're not just Zionists. It is organized Jewry. That is what created Jeffrey Epstein. That is what sustained Jeffrey Epstein. And that is who Jeffrey Epstein worked on behalf of. That is the story. And that's the part I don't see anybody talking about. So people have been asking me all week, you're defending him, you're covering it up. Why are you trying to refute these allegations? Because I truly believe this is a limited hangout. This is a layered conspiracy. Something did happen here. This is a revelation about how power works in America. And rather than look at what is staring you in the face, something far more spectacular and sensational is being dangled in front of you to distract you. And so everyone is using the words satanic pedophile, and no one is using the word Jewish fixer. Everyone is using those words, pedophile elites. No one is using the words Jewish billionaires. And that's what it is. What unites them together is not their love of pedophilia or their worship of Satan. What unites them is their Jewish identity. That is why when they email each other, they talk about Goyim in a pejorative way. That is why they have these deep connections to the Israeli security state. That is why, down to a man, they are participating in the pro-Israel cause politically. That's what's going on here. So that's the truth about Jeffrey Epstein. Once you put it together, it's unignorable and unavoidable that that's what he represents. So that's our show about Jeffrey Epstein. That's our expose. That is what is new in the files. Okay, so he's connected to Lauder. Think about the degrees of separation, even in this Trump administration. The head of the Development Finance Corporation is Leon Black's kid. So Jeffrey Epstein's number two benefactor, his son, is heading up the Development Finance Corporation. Do you know how insane that is? Jeffrey Epstein, the mastermind, the monster, his number two benefactor that gave him maybe upwards of $300 million altogether, his son is running the Development Finance Corporation, which is our version of Belt and Road. So we're giving money away under the auspices that it's a private sector investment. Development Finance Corporation, that's like foreign aid, but investing in private entities. Do you know who else is on the board of the Development Finance Corporation? Marco Rubio, the neocon who receives patronage from Miriam Adelson. Howard Lutnick, the Commerce Secretary, who is also a close personal friend of Jeffrey Epstein. So the head of the DFC, the Commerce Secretary, who is also on the board of the DFC, both one degree of separation from Jeff Epstein. Benjamin Black, who's the head of the DFC, writes an op-ed with Joe Lonsdale about how they're going to use the DFC. Joe Lonsdale co-founded the University of Austin, Texas with Barry Weiss. Joe Lonsdale's an investor in Barry Weiss, who became the head of CBS under Larry Ellison through Larry Ellison's connections to Trump. Okay? And Lonsdale is also the head of the Founders Fund, which is created by Peter Thiel. Lonsdale is also a founding father of Palantir, which is created by Peter Thiel, who is also connected to Jeffrey Epstein, who Jeffrey Epstein invested $40 million into. The nominee for the chairman of the Federal Reserve is the son-in-law of Ronald Lauder, who Jeffrey Epstein laundered money for by purchasing art with Leon Black, who is again Jeffrey Epstein's number two benefactor. Epstein's coordinating art purchases with Ronald Lauder, a Trump ally, Again, father-in-law of Trump's Federal Reserve nominee, who has given Trump millions of dollars over the years to his campaign and super PAC, and who's also doing art deals with Leon Black, negotiated by Epstein. Ronald Lauder happens to be the chair of the World Jewish Congress and the World Economic Forum. He succeeded Edgar Bronfman Sr., who he and Ronald Lauder and Les Wexner all formed the mega group 30 years ago to push war in Iraq with Frank Luntz, roommate to Kevin McCarthy. Okay? It goes around and around and around and around. J.D. Vance, who runs for Senate, getting money from Peter Thiel, Jeff Epstein acolyte, and rumored to have had a fundraiser in Les Wexner's home. That's alleged because he comes from Ohio. It just goes around and around and around. And by the way, with Peter Thiel, when he was asked about his connections to Epstein on Joe Rogan, he pushed the lie that Epstein was a financial genius. Rogan says, "What's the deal with Epstein?" Peter Thiel says, "Well, he's a tax genius." So that's a fucking lie. It just goes around and around, and it's always Jewish. Donald Trump's attorney general, Bill Barr, had jurisdiction over the prison that Epstein killed himself in 2019, and his father, a Jew, got Jeff Epstein his start at Dalton School, where he was hired and tutored the kids of Alan Greenberg at Bear Stearns, where he got his first job. Around and around, always. This is how it goes. Mark Rowan, Leon Black's partner, who's now with Jared Kushner on the Gaza Peace Board. And people want to say, it's a satanic thing, it's a pedophile thing, it's a Jewish thing. Epstein is first and foremost, before he's a pervert, before he's a occultist, before he's an eclectic charismatic person, he is a Jew and a product of Jewry and works on behalf of Jewry and shows how Jewry operates in America, a patronage network, an intelligence network, a finance network, a political network, internationally, all rolled into one. That's what it is. And that's what the emails show, black and white, and we have them dead to rights on this. But that's the angle that the conspiracy theorists don't want us to look at. They want us to talk about psychics and aliens and giants and time travel and cannibalism and adrenochrome and satanic ritual abuse. They want us to talk about anything other than that. It's not Jewish. Judaism has nothing to do with it. It's not about Jewish identity. It's not all Jews. It's about magic and science fiction. That in and of itself is the conspiracy. That's the truth about Jeffrey Epstein.